You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome in to this Monday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. We are sorry we didn't get to any weekend stuff, but there was nothing to talk about this weekend. And now we have a lot to talk about because they have a lot of games this week, and we can talk about some dominating performances from last week. And of course, to do that with me, it's Monday, which means it's the Tony and Adam show. Adam, what's up, man? How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Thank God there is not a weekend game. I really nice to have a Sunday where we don't have to plan around a game. Just we could just say, hey, what time you want to do the show? And we do the show. It's great.
It is really great. We don't have to hope the game ends early so we can go to bed at a reasonable time to do these. But lots to dissect today because the Pacers lost to the Raptors. I believe it was 115-120, yes. But the story of that game was by far the newly acquired Victor Oladipo. So we'll talk about that game. We'll talk about him. We'll talk about a little bit of struggling Sabonis and the consistency of some of the guys scoring a lot of points. Then we'll preview tonight's game against the New York Knicks, as well as Wednesday's game against the Bulls. So I guess we should start by talking about the Raptors game. So in that game, the Raptors just showed that, you know, I think these two teams are kind of evenly matched. You know, the Pacers won at home by 3 and the Raptors won at home by 5. What were your biggest takeaways from that game in particular?
Well, I got a couple, but the first one I want to hit is we kind of predicted it, or at least I did. We talked about this game earlier this week, the DeMar DeRozan revenge game. He played terrible that first Pacer game. Lance sort of showed him up. He's got this little rivalry with Lance. And DeRozan came to play on Friday night. He put up 26 points. I mean, he was awesome. He was the best player, probably. I mean, there were a couple other things that killed the Pacers, but DeRozan had his revenge for sure.
Yeah, he was really smooth, especially in that third quarter when the Raptors really took over the game. I believe the Pacers were winning at the end of the first quarter.
Yes, they always are. They're almost every game. We went to this Raptors game 2 weeks ago and we said, all right, they're up like 13 in the first quarter. It's like, all right, how many minutes till they're down 2 or 3 points? And you count it every time, the third quarter. Second quarter, they get run out of the building almost every time.
Yeah, they lost the second quarter 38-26, and they actually did not lose another quarter of this game. But that was really the swing was when – you know, the Raptors team is super deep when they can put in, you know, the strength of their bench, and they were really able to take it away, especially against the short rotation, even though TJ Leaf actually had a nice little run in the first quarter. You remember his nice offensive rebound and put back over two guys? That was a good play.
Yeah, he was still -8, heard somewhere he's still the worst offensive rating and worst competitor player that plays in the rotation, so he still doesn't really fit in this picture yet.
Yeah, he doesn't get a ton of run. Yeah, like the bench in particular, Leaf -8, Stevenson -10, Joseph -11, Sabonis -4, and specifically those last two guys, Joseph, I almost just said Jabonis. Joseph and Sabonis combined were 4 of 19, so really, really rough night for those two. And that's kind of what killed them is not being able to stop that Lowry plus the bench unit, and when those two guys were in, the Pacers weren't able to score at all.
Yeah, for like contrast, in the previous game, like I think Lance had to be – so Lance was actually he was still -11 in the last Raptors game. Lance had an awesome game. I don't know why he was -11 still, but maybe because that second quarter run. But yeah, this game was just, I mean, there was just the Raptors must have kind of known how they wanted to play the Pacers because the first game Valanciunas was terrible. I think he barely hit the court. In the first game, Valanciunas got like 14 minutes. He scored 6 points versus this game. He had a much better game. He was able to play 21 minutes. He had 13 points. I mean, they just knew what they wanted differently, and Ibaka did a great job stretching the floor the entire night.
Yeah, Ibaka was someone that I had an eye on as being one of the most impactful players for them. He had 15 points, 8 rebounds, and a devastating block on a Bogdanović fast break, which was the season because he looked back, saw Ibaka, still tried to take the layup with Corey Joseph right next to him and got absolutely denied. I don't know why he decided to shoot that. But yeah, Ibaka was really good. And CJ Miles off the bench, even though he was only 2 of 7, he was in 16 minutes. I mean, we talked about that when we pre-game with Sean 2 weeks ago, but he just chucks these threes like none other. And it spreads up reach guys out the second he catches the ball that he's able to move it around and keep that second unit going. And the Pacers didn't really have an answer for him, especially with chicken with his head cut off a lot.
You called that Miles thing too. You said he was just like a 3-point chucker, but interesting that now on so that full Magic Thunder trade comes full circle now with where Oladipo, Sabonis play against Poeltl and Ibaka. So all four of those guys were involved in that trade 2 years ago. It's just interesting to see how this is these two.
Hey, wait, you're forgetting one. You're forgetting one. Remember, mm-hmm. because with the Thunder traded for Oladipo, they also sent away Ersan Ilyasova, who's on the Hawks now. So
that's right. He was such a throw-in piece that I forgot about him.
Yeah, he totally was. But it did come full circle, and Ibaka was pretty good.
Yeah, you forget about Ibaka. He's one of these players where he has been kind of relegated on this Raptors team to like the third option again, like he was in Oklahoma City. But like you forget how good he is when he was. You know, he had 15-8. He stretches the floor ridiculously well for a guy his size. And he's one of those players where, like, at one point he was playing in, like, Western Conference Finals, NBA Finals, consistently, and you always knew who he was, and then he kind of fell off because he went away from playing one of the better teams, and now it's kind of good to see him back, but it sucked for the Pacers.
It's funny that in all the shuffling, the Magic ended up with nobody good, and the Thunder, Raptors, and Pacers got all the good players. But how have we gotten this far and not talked about Jakob Poeltl's career game? I can't believe it. He was an integral part of the Raptors' success.
Well, he exploited the hell out of Sabonis. Sabonis played terrible, I thought, in this game. I mean, Sabonis had a bad week overall. We were hitting this. We were talking about it earlier before we were doing the show, but Sabonis had an awful week, and Poeltl, I don't know, maybe because they were traded for each other or something. I don't know.
Yeah, 8 of 8 from the field was really his thing just because he was able to, bang on Sabonis inside, and that maybe that made him less confident on offense. Who knows? But yeah, he had his number. That's for sure.
Yeah, was Poeltl the same draft as Sabonis?
Yes. Yeah. Oh no. Poeltl was 2 years ago.
No, they were the same draft. Weren't they the guys who went against each other? Sorry, this is gonna sound really weird. They went against each other in the tournament because Poeltl played for Utah and Sabonis played for Gonzaga, and they went against each other. And that was when I think Sabonis, I can't remember. I think Poeltl was projected to go higher, and Sabonis killed him in the game, if I remember right. But
Poeltl went 9th, and Sabonis went 11th. You're correct.
Yeah, so interesting to see that, too. Same draft class. I just remember those guys playing each other in the tournament a couple of years ago. It's interesting to see that come full circle, too. It's a lot of this team is a lot of kind of twists and ties with the Pacers and the Raptors with Corey Joseph and all that. It's just interesting to see where these two teams kind of are tied together in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like we talk about this a lot, but I feel like there's just a lot of teams that the Pacers have former guys of, which is interesting. The Nets, the Raptors, the Sixers, the Timberwolves. But did you know the Pacers lost the rebounding bet on this game?
I would assume so, since every time they do, they usually lose a game. And they were killed in the paint, too.
It was close. It was 46-47, but they lost it. Yeah, Kalen had this one. I remember it, so I don't have to look it up, thankfully. It was 60-40 in points in the paint, too. That's a huge discrepancy.
Oh, I thought it was higher. I think I almost had 70 points in the paint, but I could be wrong on that one. I don't know. Maybe it might have been the Rockets game. McMillan was talking about how they got killed in the paint. They get killed in the paint all the time, which has not actually been that bad for them. But this game, the post players, so combined between Ibaka, between Valanciunas, between Poeltl, the three guys that mainly played kind of down low, they had, 15, 13 plus 18. So that's like 56 points, right? Those guys, 46 points in themselves. So they got crushed.
Yeah, and they were able to shut down the drives from not the best but effective drivers. Like Bogdanovich was only 2 of 11 and Collison was only 5 of 19. So, they just dominated the game in the paint. Even though Turner had a pretty good game, actually, with his 17 points, he shot well. But they were mostly jumpers. No one was really banging in the post well for the Pacers. So tough game, but with the mid-range and threes falling in the Pacers' favor, I'm pretty sure they were way better in the mid-range, but the three-point game was pretty similar. But yeah, they're gonna have to be a bit better in the post going forward if they want to beat a team like this that really bangs you on the inside.
Yeah, I mean Turner didn't have a terrible game, but he has turned a corner though a little bit. He looks better this week. He has 19 and I think 19, 15, and 17 in the week, which isn't terrible, but he still is settling for a lot of inside the three-point or two-point jumpers, just kind of frustrating to see because it's not really an efficient shot because it's percentage wise, it's not efficient to shoot an 18 footer consistently.
Yeah, I wish he would just step back a few steps and take the three, but it does make him enough that I'm not upset about it. So I'm not going to complain. I'm just going to hope that he one day gets behind the line. But for all of you who are frustrated that we waited this long to talk about Oladipo's amazing game,
yeah, we just beat around the bush basically.
We did our best to transition to this appropriately. Oladipo, 36 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, and 3 blocks, and only 1 foul. He was literally the entire Pacers offense when he was in the game.
Yeah, he was awesome. There's one stretch where he was like 11 of 14. I mean, he had an awesome week. We were talking about he had 81 points on the whole week. So that's awesome. But yeah, he looked like he could get his shot anywhere he wanted to score anyway. There were a couple of times he got in the lane and he just blew past. They were getting good switches to him on Ibaka and he blew past Ibaka. I mean, he looks awesome. And we will maybe talk about this later, but he looks like an all-star level point guard and he just looks awesome. I don't know. I mean, it's watching him Friday was like watching. I mean, Pacers had Paul George kind of when he had his peak when he could score like that, but it was just like, it was really, it's just kind of really fun when you have a guy who can just like seem like it can't be stopped basically at some moments during games. And it's makes it more fun to watch.
Yeah. And against the Rockets, you know, that's not the game we're focused on really here, but he had three steals and three blocks in the first quarter or something crazy. Like I know one of his blocks didn't get registered, but it was a block, but he had three and like he's killing it on defense too. And it's leading to these easy transition opportunities. And he's distributing when he gets in the lane and gets cut off and he's drilling these crazy pull up threes. And he's just a monster on offense. And he had just, he could not be stopped by literally anybody in this Raptors game. It was insane.
Yeah, he's literally all over the floor. I mean, he had, what, 36, 7, 7, 3, and 3, I think were his stats. I mean, he was all over the place, 6 assists, not 7. But he's all over the place, and he played 39 minutes, too. I mean, he sort of faded a little late, his jump. He kind of settled for too many jumpers because I think he thought he could make them because he was kind of heat check mode. But he is, I mean, we talk about this, he definitely made the leap. But no matter what happened the rest of the season, we can sufficiently say he made the leap from whatever we thought it was going to be that next year after the Magic went to the Thunder, he made that leap to like the next level.
He finally did. He's so fast now. He's in more efficient score. He's a really good one-on-one defender. You know, he made the leap. Also, side note that's annoying me. He played for 38 minutes and 58 seconds in the Raptors game, and NBA.com puts that as 38 minutes. That's stupid. That should be 39.
Yeah, minutes, ESPN put it at 39, so that's why I nailed that.
I know. I might switch to ESPN box scores for these reads. But, yeah, he's really, really improved almost everywhere. I mean, his off-ball defense is the same. But, I mean, if that's the worst thing about him, then he's an astounding player. He's just been so good this year. He's been most of the reason this team has been so good.
Yeah, he's slowly creeping up that kind of into the one of the better shooting guards this league. I mean, he's averaging right now the same amount of points as DeMar DeRozan. You know, DeRozan is probably the number six shooting guard in the NBA right now, depending on where you classify Harden. He's five Harden.
Yeah.
Okay, but it depends where you classify Harden and Beal. But he's averaging more points, I think, than Bradley Beal. But there's a quote from this week, though, I remember that somebody asked D. Wade about Oladipo, and D. Oladipo said D. Wade thought Oladipo could be one of the best shooting guards in the league two-way-wise. So he's kind of finally reaching his potential, which is awesome to see that he's doing in Indiana because it makes that trade look better. And we have him locked up for three more years and at a pretty cheap deal now. If he plays like this the next 3 years, his contract looks like cheap, basically, because he's less than the max, basically.
Yeah, he's probably about fairly paid now, which is great news considering everyone said he was overpaid in the offseason.
Well, he might be underpaid now. I mean, if he hits the free agent market this offseason, he'd probably get a max deal, and a max deal is more than 21 a year.
I don't think he'd get a max deal. I still don't.
Oh, if he played like if his stats today for his end of season stats, somebody would 25-year-old guy, somebody would throw him a 4 year, whatever it is, 120 or one close to 100, at least 100 mil.
Yeah, for sure, 100 mil. But I don't think he'd get. I think he'd be very close, but I don't think he'd get the max. I think the max got misconstrued over this. This cap spike.
Drew Holiday is making $126 million over 5 years. I think Oladipo will be close.
That is a very, very different. That's a very, very different scenario.
I know. I'm just at least $25 million a year, which makes him underpaid per se. If he's probably
Danny Green, who is almost as good as Oladipo, is making $10 million a year. So that is my
The Spurs, dude. The Spurs are really good. First of all, they got Green early, and I'm just saying if Oladipo hit the offseason, this offseason, he would get a deal worth $25 million a year, which makes him then underpaid. He makes $21 million a year.
I bet he'd get about what he gets right now.
No, he'd get more than that. He'd get more than that. Gary Harris is getting what he gets right now. And Gary Harris is not even on the league.
Better than him.
Yeah, better than Victor Oladipo. Gary Harris?
Yeah. No. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think so. Not right now.
No, I agree with you. I still love Oladipo, and he's like in probably the third tier of shooting guards now, but I still think he's like with like in the grouping of like Gary Harris, Danny Green, Avery Bradley and him are like right behind that top five.
I'm pulling up Gary Harris stats right now because I don't think
Gary Harris tells the story of these players.
Well, but what tells the story of these players then? Not stats.
Danny Green's like What? Go like Danny Green and Avery Bradley are just nasty good defenders. Like, that's what makes them so good.
Yes, that I give you that, but I'm not sure Gary Harris is some nasty defender. And I would say Oladipo
is super efficient and is excellent coming off of screens and never turns the ball over and a really good defender.
Yeah, but Gary Harris couldn't lead a team like the way Oladipo is, right? You would agree, like Oladipo could actually be the leader of a team.
Skill set,
Gary Harris probably Peter can't.
That's not his skill set. It's not like I'm going to go be the high scorer and lead a team.
But that's what also makes a guy worth $25 million a year if they can lead a team. Like Danny Green probably can't be the leader on a team. He is the great like guy to compliment any superstar, but he's not like, hey, Danny Green, we want you to be the main guy. And that's what separates Oladipo from the rest of these guys is that he can be that guy.
I don't know if he can.
Well, he is right now. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be like the best guy on a championship team, but he could be the maybe if this team wins 45 games, he's the best guy on a playoff team, which is impressive in itself. I mean, that's sort of a bar. He's
the top 10 starter, so he's definitely worth, you know, 18 to 22 million for sure. But
I think he's worth 25. I think right now he gets 25.
I hear you loud and clear on what you think he's worth.
I mean, DeRozan gets 28. I'm just thinking I'm throwing out guys right now. Beal has the max, whatever his max is, probably like 31 by this point.
He gets that Beal?
What's Beal's?
Beal's like 23 million right now.
He is, but he gets a 7.5% increase, right, every year?
Yes. No, he got signed last summer. He gets 8%. No, he gets 7.5%. You're right. Sorry.
Because he was two summers ago.
No, he was last summer, which is before the new CBA.
Oh, whatever it was. He's kind of hit in last summer.
Yes.
He signed it 2 years ago. But that's what I'm saying. He's probably around that. I mean, I don't think he's quite at the Beal, the Rosen level yet, but he would probably get that kind of money just because of his age and what people think he can do.
I don't know. I think it's close. He's very properly paid right now, which is great.
Well, you have to put it into your little formula thing that, you know, spits out the overpaid stuff, right? You have one of those. So it's pretty good. It's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool sheet. I'm not going to lie.
I could pull it up. Well, I haven't updated it for the season yet, though. So it's not really fair to him.
Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry about it now. Is it because they would say that he's worth more than he is because his stats are so high?
No, last year, it'll base it off his last year's stats, which is unfair.
Yeah, no, his last year's stats were not good. They weren't terrible.
Last year he was a $16.3 million player, and he's better than that now. So
yeah, so you know,
but he's a year older.
Yeah, but he's not like it's not like his contract is for 10 years. He's on right. We're gonna get his 26 year, his 27 year, his 28 year. Like that's the prime years of a player. It's the years you're willing to overpay a little bit for those years if you think a player can reach potential.
Yes,
so like that's why he got the deal originally. He got because they thought he could become with that.
Yes, and he will certainly mold into that as he gains chemistry with Turner and Sabonis, which is going to be spectacular.
Yeah, and this team is built really well around him. I mean, all the players are constructed really well together. That helps. You know,
him only being 25 is like the present value of the contracts. What you worry about with older guys, so like you pay him like a ton of money for them to be better than it at the beginning and worse at the end. But he's like right at it now, and he'll be better by the end. So you're totally getting a value on this $21 million or 44, which is great.
Plus, like I was saying, the team plays so well that it kind of lifts everybody up, just like a notch. Like you can see it, like Black Dodge is a little better than he should be. So is Collison. I mean, everybody basically, Turner's finally hit it now, but for a while, like everybody but Turner's being lifted up a little bit because the chemistry was so well with this team. So
that helps.
But
I think if we're talking about everybody, we should talk about what you wanted to talk about earlier, too.
What I want to talk about earlier.
The grouping of people in the 12 to whatever point scoring range.
Oh right, I was saying to you before the show when we were talking about what we were talking about. Like this team is funny to look at because they have so many guys who are just like 12 and 5 consistently. Like Thad Young, Darren Collison, Bogdanovich is actually a little better than that this year. Even I want to throw Corey Joseph in there maybe, but
so there are five players with between 12.3 and 14.8 points per game. That's crazy.
And then how many guys are either averaging 5 rebounds or 5 assists or above? Like, you know, 12 and 5.
Five rebounds or above is Stevenson, Oladipo, Young, Turner, Sabonis. And 5 assists or above is just Collison.
so basically Turner, Sabonis, Young, Turner and Collison fall on that. And then Bogdanovich. What's he probably at 2 or 3 assists a game? Is he even at that? In Depot. Well, Depot, obviously. I'm talking about just like.
Right.
But just kind of this team reminds me a little bit of how they had built their teams kind of before Paul George peaked in the early 2000s. They had like this, they just had a bunch of like guys who could start in other teams who you would say or be really good number 6 men on a bunch of teams and that worked for them. And they've got 7 of them or 8 of them now, depending on where you throw Stevenson in. Maybe they'll have 9 once Robson comes back.
Yeah, that's going to be huge when Glenn comes back, when they have a 9-man rotation. That'll really help the team. So it's good that they've had so many consistent contributors, especially in the dearth of rotation players that they have, being only 8.5 players deep most of the time.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess some guys who don't, like Corey Joseph doesn't fall in that category, but Corey Joseph is does everything else really well. Like, he's the really good floor general for them off the bench. I mean, he just does other stuff that makes me, if he played the minutes, he could probably get up to 12-5 a game.
Corey does not turn over the ball, which is his biggest skill.
I mean, right, he's basically at 8-3, but he's only playing 25 minutes versus Collison, who's playing, I think, probably 32. So if they flip minutes, you would see Joseph at that number too. So
right. It's good. It's really nice to see.
Yeah, no, Pritchard did a great job with his team. And you just hope they can avoid any injuries until Robinson comes back, because they have to play the guys a little bit, because they stop playing Leaf because he just doesn't quite fit in with this team. But if they can, hopefully they can avoid any major injury, get Robinson back, and then get guys playing a little less minutes overall.
Yeah, that'll be huge. It'll knock Lance's minutes down the most, which, if you know me, I'm pretty pumped about
that. I don't
know,
though. I wonder if they'll just siphon off some from, like, because Collison
or Bogdanovich plays those 4 minutes.
Yeah, I just wonder if they'll siphon off from Bogdanovich or siphon a little bit off Collison, a little bit off Oladipo. I mean, right now, Oladipo is at 33.5 a game, which is the leading on the Pacers. So, but Collison at 32 is a little bit high end for him, because he's like 30. So you want him probably playing probably less than 30 minutes a game. Just it helps for the whole season, at least, like, longevity wise.
It's really, I forgot Oladipo missed that game, because I was like, how does he have more minutes per game than Thad, who's played more minutes than him? That was a dumb thought of me, but whatever.
Yeah, because Oladipo missed that game with his knee, which was very nice miss on immediately. He got hurt and he immediately had the best week of his probably his season. Or one of them. He's had a lot of good weeks this year. His opening week was pretty awesome too. Or opening that after the first weekend was pretty awesome. So
it was.
Yeah, but clearly the injury was nothing. It was just a precautionary issue, because he immediately came back and scored 26 against the Magic, and then 36.
19-36. Yeah. All right. Well, the last thing we should talk about before we get into these games is Sabonis' rough week. 4-14 from the field. Was really struggling to stop Jakob Poeltl in the Raptors game. Couldn't hardly get a shot off against Clint Capella and Tarik Black. In the Rockets game, they really were shutting down any pick and rolls. He had 4 fouls in the Rockets game as well, which, you know, kept his minutes down under 20. So kind of probably the toughest week of his Pacers tenure so far, I would say.
Yeah, I'd agree. Good sign is his rebounds are still up there. He's still at 7 and 8 rebounds. The points were there. You know, like you said, Houston, he didn't get anything shots off, and he just couldn't buy a shot against Toronto, basically. So, you know, if he's still doing his rebounding thing and hopefully he can set up some pick and rolls, if he doesn't score, you know, has a bad scoring game, it happens. He's not, you know, we don't expect him to be some elite level scorer like he was the first couple weeks of the season, where he couldn't miss a shot, it seemed like. But, you know, it's a down week. Hopefully he'll recover this week. He's got some better teams, you know, it's better matchups, at least, I think, better coming up with the Bulls.
These are two teams that he can be very effective against. Last time against the Knicks, he was 6 of 9 and had 8 rebounds on his way to one of his best games this season. So I think now we should transition to talking about tonight's game against the New York Knicks. So last time these two teams played, I told you off air before the game, I think the Knicks are going to win. And in the first quarter, you texted me because the Pacers were up by 15, and you said, what was that? And then the Pacers lost by 7. So hopefully this one can go a little better at home in Indiana. And I think the biggest news to start is it was just announced about an hour ago that Tim Hardaway will not be traveling with the team to Indiana and will not play in this game.
Oh, why not?
I don't remember. I should have. I should remember. I can't remember what the injury is.
I could pull it up right now for you.
Porzingis missed a game with an ankle sprain. Ntilikina got hurt, so maybe they'll be a little banged up, which could be weird. But yeah, Tim Hardaway out in this one.
Yeah, I was gonna say they're playing them on a back to back because the Knicks are playing at recording this at 8:16 on Sunday. But so Porzingis obviously is not playing because it's an ankle injury. I wonder if he might not even play against the Pacers, to be honest. I mean, when he heard it, there were some worries that it was like really bad. So that's a huge break. He doesn't play because he's the only reason they basically lost that game. And Hardaway has a leg injury, they said, so he won't play. So
holy cow. Hardaway or Porzingis, holy cow, this could be a bloodbath.
And on a back-to-back, this could be a Pacers at home after back-to-back loss for the Pacers, who are clearly kind of like looking to pounce on a bad team. So we're just going to preview the Bulls and Knicks game right now. These could be, if Porzingis and Hardaway don't play, this could be like two huge blowouts for the Pacers. I mean, we're talking 20-point-plus wins.
Holy cow, I've never been so confident in a Pacers win in my life, which means they're for sure going to lose, right?
Well, no, Porzingis is going to end up playing and have 45 points, and that's how they're going to lose.
Yeah, seriously. If Porzingis doesn't play, I might predict a 25-point win for the Pacers in this one, because they really played them really, really well in that first game. Like, at the end of three quarters, they were up by 12, and then they just completely fell apart in that fourth quarter because Porzingis is so unstoppable. So if he doesn't play, I don't know what chance the Knicks have in this one.
Yeah, what do you – so let's say they get in the situation again. What did they have to do? Is it just double-team Porzingis basically and just force the ball out of his hand? Because, right, I mean, like, nobody else could beat them that day except Porzingis, who was top of the key, took every shot and made it. Like, what do you do at that point?
Well, he's 7-3, so he – like, okay, I have an article coming out with this stat tomorrow, so I feel bad spoiling it, but – he shot 70% on contested shots in the month of November and only 1% on wide open shots. Like, weird that he shoots better with a man on him. And because he's 7'3", he's just confident enough that he can just rise up over you and sink it. And it makes him literally impossible to guard. So I don't really know what the plan – the plan has to be to make it as hard as possible for him to get the ball. So, you know, double teaming the guy at the point of attack, so it's harder for him to make the pass. And then Thad Young has to make life hell for Porzingis when he comes off a screen and just be in the way and be, you know, chipping at him with his hands and stuff like that. That's how I think you stop him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think Thad Young might be actually the better guy to guard him on some touches, because Thad Young can get his little hand in there and swipe balls out of him. Because I was thinking Turner would not be terrible, but Turner sometimes outside of the rim seems kind of, or outside of the center of the hoop, basically seems kind of off sometimes. Like, he doesn't quite play well on one-on-one pulled out defending wise. He's not great at that. He's better.
You're right. He's better around the basket for sure.
So I don't know. We'll see if he even plays. And, you know, the thing about Porzingis, though, is, you know, he's great until he gets one injury, and then it seems to bother him throughout. Like, it happened last year where he was pretty good for 30 or 40 games, then he hurt his back, and it kind of threw him off the rest of the season. So we'll see if the ankle bothers him anymore. I think he might play, though, because he seemed like he was fine after the game when they played on Friday, I think, or Thursday or Friday when the Knicks last played, and he wanted to come back in. So I wonder if they held him out for a game like they did with Oladipo. So I think Porzingis might play.
It looked really gruesome, that injury, so it's great that he's up. I mean, I'm happy he's, like, not super hurt and will be able to play in this game, but, you know, who really knows what will happen there. And Hardaway, another one, he had 16 in that first game. Well, and actually, he was a minus one, but he's still up. You know, that's really his role at the two, whatever, three, whatever you want to call him for this team. So
actually, so there's some news I just read on Roto World. Kristaps Zingers won't travel the Knicks for Monday's game in Indiana.
Oh, okay.
2 hours ago, so for us at 6 o'clock. So no Porzingis.
All right, well, I'm going to predict a massive Pacers win in this game.
Yeah, so who's going to start in his place? Is it going to be
– I bet their starting lineup will be Jarrett Jack, Courtney Lee, Doug McDermott, Enes Kanter, and Kyle Quinn.
That makes sense. Unless – does Nicotine not start? I don't know if Nicotine's going to play or not. Either.
He hasn't started very much this year. The only other option might be Beasley at the four, just for his shot creation, but I have no idea. That's like a huge loop in the lineup. So who really knows? You're going to have a huge game now with Porzingis out. Is going to be Thad Young, guarded by some terrible defender, probably.
Yeah, on the Pacers, I just worry about Enes Kanter. He also destroyed them that first game. He had
18 rebounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember how many he had. He had a lot. So he's somebody to watch, but I mean – I would say Hardaway and Porzingis are their best two players, probably. Without those two, that's any team without the best two players stinks, basically.
Yeah, they're definitely the best two offensive players. So it's going to be a tough sledding for the Knicks to score. You know, here's the thing, too. Like, I love Courtney Lee because he's from Indy, so I'll skip him. But McDermott can't create his own shot, and Jack can barely create his own shot, and Kanter can do a little bit in the post, but he has to get fed. And you know, Kylo Quinn can't create his own shot. So it's really going to be up to like half of Jarrett Jack and Michael Beasley to create a lot of their shots, which is going to be not super scary.
Yeah.
In this one.
It should be an opportunity for the Pacers to, you know, feed Turner a ton and sort of, and they should be able to dictate the way the game is played. And maybe, hopefully, if they play fast enough, kind of run Kanter off the court.
Yeah. Kanter's not a good defender. So Turner would have been my X factor in this one.
So let's go. You want to go ahead and do that now then?
Yeah, I'll pick Turner, just like I just said. Well, especially with Porzingis out, he played center a little bit and was matched up with Turner in that first game, but that'll just be Kanter and O'Quinn and maybe probably actually at least a little bit of Willie Hernan Gomez, who's pretty good, but he can't really defend in space either. So the pick and pop game should be working for literally all the bigs. So Thad, Sabonis, and Turner. But I'll pick Turner to have the best game, and if hopefully they can keep feeding him like they did in the Rockets game.
All right, I'd agree with that. I think if they get the pace going too, they can maybe do what they did without what they did to Valanciunas two games when they played them the first time and run Kanter off the court, which would be kind of huge because Kanter's not really built to play fast. My X factor is going to actually be Corey Joseph. He's struggled for a couple of games now. He's going to come off the bench with playing weaker point guards guarded by probably the rookie if Nicotine plays. And so, you know, he might get a lot of minutes, first of all, because they might be winning by a lot. But if he could help extend the bench lead, that was all he has to do basically is, if, you know, if they're up, let's say 10 and he comes in and he can extend the lead to 15 or 20, be perfect. And that's, and I think he needs to have a recovery game. And I think at home, he'll play pretty well.
I agree. I think it will be a good one for him, especially because the Knicks bench guards are already pretty bad. So now take away Tim Hardaway and like Damian Dotson's going to play probably, maybe Ramon Sessions. So I totally concur that Corey Joseph will have a good game. Also, totally forgot about this, but in that first Knicks game, remember Alex Poythress played like 6 minutes and had was a plus 10. He was really good.
I do remember that. That was the game because both really Sabonis and Turner got in a bunch of foul trouble too. That kind of screwed them up.
Yeah. Well, TJ Leaf didn't even play. It was all Poythress. That's a crazy game.
Was that where Leaf's ankle was still hurt?
Yeah, that was the game he missed with the ankle injury.
Yeah. So one of but yeah. I say the only thing stopping Corey Joseph from having a really nice game would be if Lance had a really nice game. And Lance would just, you know, if Lance gets hot, he's just going to keep shooting and not pass the ball because that's the way Lance is. When Lance at home, last time at home would have been awesome.
Those two team guys are complete. They are my favorite dynamic when they're on the court. They just really, like Corey Johnson.
They argue the entire time on the court. It's hilarious. It's not like bad arguing. It's like Corey wants him to run an offensive set, and Lance just like, no, let me do my thing. And it's like, Corey, like, give me the ball. I'll run it. Get you. Like, and Corey passes the ball every time, and Lance really gets the ball back to Corey when he's open. It's like I don't know how Corey does it, but if they keep winning, it won't matter. But I don't know how he does it, how he plays with Lance. Like, I think of a guy like Corey who's very unselfish and really just wants you to give him the ball when he's open, would you get frustrated with Lance over time. But the bench is playing okay when they're out there actually together, at least at home.
It's really funny when those throw on the court together. And yes, the better at home. 8 points, 9 seconds, actually. So go check that out. We didn't even opening where the Knicks are 10th in offense and 23rd in pace. And without their two best players, I expect mightily, which is why my butcher is going to be Michael Beasley. Because even though Michael Beasley is a hilarious player who's not technically that great at basketball, he'll probably get a bigger run in this game than normal because they'll need his shot creation. And, you know, if he gets hot, he could have a good game.
Yeah, that's fair. Especially if maybe he starts. I mean, he has started twice this season, so I don't know how they want to do that. I like that one. I was thinking Doug McDermott had a big game.
Yeah, he's a good shooter.
Yeah, I just, you know, get some spot up threes. We're going to do our score prediction in a second. I think it's going to be a bloodbath at this point. I'm not sure. I think the highest score for the Knicks might be because of garbage time, honestly.
Well, don't forget that Courtney Lee's going to have a monster game back in front of his home crowd.
Yeah, where's Courtney? I know he's from Indianapolis, but where in Indianapolis is he from?
Yeah, he went to Pike. So North Indianapolis.
Well, that's where I'm from. I'm from that area.
Welcome home, Courtney Lee. That'll be cool. But, I'll go first here. They are going to dominate this game. If you ask me, I think they are going to win 115-88.
Ooh, 27-point win.
27. Rare for me to go that high, but really I think they're going to have a good one in this one.
I'm going to go 111-90, 21-point win.
21-pointer, all right. Are they home for the Bulls Wednesday? Let's transition
to six-game homestead. So, of course, they are. They play six straight home games. First time in 10 years they've played more than like three games at home. They made a big deal about it.
Stink. The Bulls' offense stinks. It's last in the league by far at 98.6 points for 100 possessions. They're 22nd. They're okay on defense. They're 22nd in defense. They're a pretty slow-paced team.
Did you really just say 22nd is okay?
Look at their roster and tell me how they're 22nd in defense.
No. I'm just saying, if you take a step back view, you just said
I mean that. Compared to expectations, they have a good defense. Yeah, I guess is what I meant.
They're a terrible team. Let's just say it. They're not a good team.
They are a horrible team. They have no one that can create a shot for others because Zach LaVine's out. So I'm glad the Pacers are playing them twice at least before LaVine comes back.
Yeah, they've lost 8 straight games. They've lost 9 of 10 at least. They really want Marvin Bagley, who looks really awesome right now. So they've lost
Their last win was in November 13th.
They've lost 14 of their last 15 games.
They had one win in the two wins in the month of November. They are terrible. They are them and the Kings are competing for that title for me at the moment.
Well, they're both going to get awesome players in the offs if they finish.
Yes, they are. All right, here we go. Let's run through. Oh my goodness. The Bulls are fourth in turnovers, third in total fouls, and every other stat on their B-Ball Ref League sheet page is 18th or worse.
Oh, man.
They are not very good. I don't even know where to start by breaking them down. Their leading scorer is Justin Holiday at 14.7 points per game, and Justin Holiday is shooting 37% from the field this year, so the fact that he's leading them in scoring is pretty funny. He's shooting almost 14 times a game. So he's the only guy besides Markkanen who he's even shown a prayer of scoring on offense for this team, and they have to run a bunch of set plays. So, yeah, they're not very good. I literally don't have anything to say.
Yeah, I remember from the first time they played, Robin Lopez looked like he could not move out there, and I remember thinking, why is he still in the NBA? He looks way too slow and can't jump high enough to get rebounds. So I think it's going to be a big night for the centers. I don't know. Honestly, it could be a big night for any of the Pacer players because they could just go off. It's just whoever gets hot, basically. But it's good now. Now maybe they'll have two easy wins. It's nice because it can kind of push them back up into the six seed range in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I don't think they'll have any trouble in this game. I mean, only two guys on the Bulls shooting over league average from three. Only four guys on the Bulls are shooting over 50% from the field, and one of those guys is Felicio, who only shoots like two times a game. I mean, they just really cannot score. Like, it's kind of crazy how bad they are at scoring. They run a lot of pick-and-roll sets, but they don't make their open jumpers off of passes. They can't finish at the rim at all. I think Chris Dunn's one of the worst finishers at the rim in the league this season, even though he's finally got his three-pointer falling. So I don't know how they're going to score, and I think Turner's defense in this game, he's just going to look like a beast down there. And everyone who's good at defending on ball is going to look like a beast in this game. So that's most of the Pacers outside of two or three guys.
Yeah, hindsight for the Pacers. Remember, the Bulls took the same approach to Pacers this offseason. They got rid of their superstar. The Bulls were the same record as the Pacers last season. Basically, they were the 8 seed. They got rid of their superstar, and instead of trying to actually win, the Pacers are doing, they went into full tank mode, and now they are the worst team to watch in the NBA versus the Pacers, who are probably one of, not the most fun team to watch, but they're a really fun team to watch. So this the Pacers were like one kind of move away from this being their season, just so people can
the Collison and Bogdanovich signing separate these two teams basically. Besides Vic just being way better, like maybe Levine comes back and is really good, but still, it's been very nice to see. The last time these two teams played, the Pacers won by 18 in Chicago. So I'm gonna set that as my baseline of like if the Pacers just play okay, I think they'll win by 18. Who is your X factor in this one?
So for the Pacers, I'm going to go with Turner. I think he's going to have an awesome night. I think this is the kind of night where he puts up 25 points and 10 rebounds. Like he has one of those, you know, where it's like, oh, is Miles Turner going to make the leap kind of articles coming up the next day from one of our blogs will be right for. You know, it's that kind of game.
Yeah. Yeah, he was pretty good in that first game too. Robin Lopez cannot defend in space. Cristiano Felicio cannot defend, period. I don't even know who else they play at center. Lauri Markkanen can't defend, period. So – yeah, definitely a big chance for Turner as well. I'm going to go with Collison this one. I know Chris Dunn's a really good on-ball defender, but Collison is just so good at creating offense for others. I bet he goes over 10 assists and moving, which is pretty much all they have to do to win is score probably 90 points. So
yeah, I think it'll honestly be a lower scoring game than people think, just because the Bulls slow down the ball ridiculously. Same way the Kings did when the Patriots played them. I mean, I think they'll win by somewhere between 15 and 25, but it's going to be slowed down. They're not going to get to 110 points probably.
Yeah, the only chance the Bulls have is that they're third in the league in defensive rebound percentage. So if they can really hit the glass, maybe they get close. But I don't see any way they win. I think I guess that's what the Butcher's for Markkanen. You know, he's pretty stretchy, and sometimes Thad falls asleep off ball. So maybe they hit the glass really hard, and Markkanen hits a bunch of his shots, and the Bulls somehow pull it out. But I see no chance the Bulls win this game.
Yeah, I'm going to pass on a Butcher. I don't think anybody has that great of a game. I don't really know where to pick. I mean, they just aren't that good of a team. They've got three wins. They have three wins through 21 games. I mean, that they don't care about winning basketball. They just don't.
Is that like when I picked the Sixers bench as my Butcher?
Yeah, except I don't respect the Bulls because they're not trying to win basketball games. I like, you know, I don't mind the team stink. Like, you know, the Nets stink, but they're at least trying to win games. Like, they're, you know, guys got hurt, whatever. But the Bulls just made no effort from the start of the season to ever say, we're going to try to win games. They have, I mean, the Hawks have two more wins than them. I mean, it's just, the Bulls are not trying to win games, and it's, I don't like that when teams don't try in the NBA. It's just not, it makes the games boring because then you have to watch this Bulls team every four times they're coming to Indiana, and they're not fun to watch. The Pacers, you know, are going to win by halftime. I can turn the game off, and it makes, you know, not trying to watch basketball, it makes it boring.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I probably will not be attending either of these two games. I will go first on the score. I think, you know what, this is going to be interesting because I think that they're going to beat the Knicks and then like, oh, whatever, the Bulls, you know, maybe they get a little complacent, but they won by 18 the first time on the road. So I'll say they win 105-85, a 20-point win.
All right, I'll go 103-81.
22-point win. We are very close through half the week. We are 47-43. Wow, we are in for a fun week, Pacers fans, with Indiana basketball being back home.
Yeah, and we're going to only do half the week because we're going to do a Thursday show together to preview the next two games because those games are more fun, the Cavs and the Nuggets. I don't know. Jokic might not be playing, but they're more fun. We'll get to see your favorite guy, Gary Harris.
Jokic is not playing. I do love Gary Harris. But we'll have a Knicks recap out tomorrow and then a Bulls preview, more specifically with someone who's more in tune with the Bulls. We might have Hunter on for that one again on Wednesday. And then Thursday we'll do the rest of the week and kind of talk about, you know, our impressions of the first quarter of the season just because we're at that point now, but we couldn't really fit it in today. It would be way too long. So we'll do like quarter season recap, you know, talk about what we liked, what we don't like, what surprised us, et cetera. What's all we'll look at as the second quarter of the season goes. You got anything you want to promote before we get out of here, Adam?
No. I guess one thing. I have an article coming out probably tomorrow morning or Tuesday. It's a cool one on Nate McMillan, quarter season through.
Ooh, that'll be fun. We'll, I haven't heard stuff.
Yeah, we'll see how it turns out. I just wanted to talk about it because he's having a great, I think he's the real winner of the way Pacers are playing right now. He looks like a real NBA coach. You know, we thought he'd be fired at the end of the year, and he's definitely not going to be fired at this point.
No, I have been very pleased with him. He's shortened the rotations and been better, so that'll be cool. I'm excited for that. I'll plug my thing too. The Knicks in the month of November shot 55% on left corner threes and 18% on right corner threes. How is that even possible? I dove into some hilarious stats like that for the month of November. So check that out. It'll be out tomorrow about noon. So yeah, you can follow this podcast at Locked On Pacers. We are growing on Twitter. It's very exciting.
We're growing in general.
Follow Adam at FruitmanM5. And if you like Corgi.
Yeah, I need to change my picture at some point. I need to change my picture at some point.
If you like corgis, you should follow Adam. Hello, and check out Indiana Sports Coverage. Cool articles. You can have a great week. We'll see you tomorrow to recap this next game.